Welcome to the Leading Deeply podcast. I'm Dr. Joe Albert, coach, consultant, and teacher, interested in storytelling and helping people thrive.
And I'm Dr. Beck Burson, a physician and psychiatrist fascinated by neurons and narratives and how people change. Thanks for joining us at Leading Deeply, a space to get curious how individuals and organizations address the undeniable desire we all have for meaning, purpose, and belonging. We want to know how leaders and those aspiring to lead can engage and animate these human needs to cultivate flourishing.
At Horizon Credit Union, community is who we serve, and helping you grow is our goal. Your path is our purpose, and together we can make a positive impact. Whether you're ready for a checking account, a home loan, or a team that cares about your dreams, doing business here does good in the community. Discover the difference and open your account today or find a branch near you at hzcu.org. Horizon Credit Union is an equal housing opportunity lender insured by NCUA.
This is about more than me, and that I am part of a larger context and dynamic, much of which is actually defined by and informed by our relationships with other people.
Welcome to Leading Deeply. I'm Joe Albert, and with me is my colleague, Dr. Beck Burson. And today our topic is really a central one in terms of this podcast series. And for some time, we've explored the notion of belonging and meaning, and today it's really focused on purpose. Purpose in our work and in our lives. And I think it's a topic that gnaws at a lot of folks in terms of finding meaning in their work, especially. Do you do work that matters to you, and what about it matters to you? So this broadcast today sort of ends our 23-24 season, which will begin again in September with our 24-25th year. Podcast series, but I'm excited about this, and I'm going to introduce our guests in a moment, but I also want to say hello to Beck. Beck, welcome.
Hi, Joe. It's great to be here, and I'm looking forward to our conversation with Dr. McCullough, and it just feels fitting to be finishing this season talking with the president of Gonzaga and knowing how important Gonzaga is to the work that we're doing, and all the important work that he's done for Gonzaga.
Yeah, and it is. This is a real treat. Today we are fortunate to have with us Gonzaga University's 26th president and Dr. Thane McCullough, who has just continued to flourish in his role and help the university do so as well during his tenure there. Dr. McCullough holds a BA from Gonzaga and was awarded a PhD in experimental social psych from Oxford University in England, 1998. He first began working at Gonzaga in 1990 and has his roots in student affairs that he remains focused on in terms of working with students. His tenure has been marked by initiatives related to community engagement, institutional sustainability, an increase in institutional prestige and recognition internationally. More than $200 million in new construction and campus improvements have been completed since his inauguration in 2010. And in addition, Dr. McCullough was well known as a very effective classroom teacher and lecturer. But more than anything, what intrigued me about meeting with him, talking with him in this podcast, is really about what about the work he's done has represented a sort of a purposeful way of leading. And I think there's a lot there. So Thane, thank you for joining us today.
Absolutely. Happy to be here. Thank you for inviting me.
Yep. And I guess we tend to begin with narrative. Narrative tends to sort of underlie a lot of the work we do in these conversations. And as much as you would like to share, when you think about purpose in your work and in your role as president, what stories sort of come to mind that brought you to that office and have helped you be so successful?
Well, Thank you. And thank you for the presumption that I've been successful, which we'll also talk about. I felt very, very lucky to be able to come to Gonzaga as an undergraduate, and perhaps luckier still that my arrival followed an enlistment in the United States Army. I didn't have the money and the wherewithal to pursue higher education seriously on a full-time basis, and found that the Army had a veterans educational assistance program that would enable me to make it happen. But it was actually the experience of joining the Army and enlisting and going through the training and then serving in the way that I did with the people I did that helped me really come for the first time to appreciate the disparities that exist in our nation with respect to access to education. I joined the military as a private E1. My military specialty was that of a cook, food service specialist. But the truth is that cooking does not perhaps require quite as much educational background as some of the other specialties in the military. And so I found I was serving among people from a lot of different places, and many of them had really struggled in terms of their growing up because they didn't have access to good quality educational experiences. So really, in a lot of ways, this was a path to a better life. I say this because the Army brings in a lot of different people. Even without perhaps the same levels of literacy or numerical ability as the better educated among us. But I also found that there were quite a few people serving in the military who just had not been afforded the opportunity to access any form of higher education. And as a result, really the opportunity to advance into, you know, professional careers and so on and so forth was forever kind of closed off for them. Yeah. And out of that came to appreciate how important the work that higher education institutions do and how critical it is that there are places where people can flourish and advance. And to be a part of that has been a real privilege. So that's actually driven a lot of what I've tried to do as regards Gonzaga, but also just being a member of the broader higher education community. And it's really been an honor.
That's really helpful. As long as I've known you, and I knew you were in the military, I don't think I put together, you know, that sense of purpose at Gonzaga with your military background. But you've always, I think, been like a teacher when, you know, for a long time, which I thought you were really superb at, but a sensitivity to the students. And I think a lot of that, what you just talked about in terms of formation process through the military, I think led you to be, I think, a certain type of teacher that was very attuned to student needs, that would work with students that maybe were struggling. And I guess I hadn't put that together before, but that's really helpful. Thanks for sharing that.
Well, I think one of the things that I also kind of emerged out of that experience, having experienced, was, you know, the vast majority of people who are in service are pretty young. They enter, you know, in their late teens, and many of them don't become career professionals in the military. So a lot of the military is made up of young people who are approximately the age of a lot of college kids, traditional age college kids. But what the military does is it just keeps on challenging people to be better and better at whatever it is that they've been asked to do. It's an imperative to continue to drive towards increased levels of mastery. And as a result, many people who are 20 years old, for example, are doing things that they never could have imagined that they either would be asked to do or could do. And I had that experience. So part of what also came with me out of that experience was a belief that people are capable of far more than they realize, and that challenging people to grow into that, to kind of grow into the full expression of who they can become, is part of what higher education is about, and part of the, if you will, the purpose institutions exist to serve in the culture. Because really, in a lot of ways, colleges and universities are about developing leaders for the culture. So there is kind of this higher expectation that comes with being a college educated person from the culture. And so what is it that people emerging out of that experience have as an expectation for themselves? We're kind of involved with setting up the matrix wherein they are asked to kind of go on that great adventure. And that's a lot of both a lot of fun and very inspiring, but it's also really important, I think. It's a very important part of how the culture discovers and finds emergent leaders is through people who have been challenged intellectually and spiritually and socially to become more and to realize that they're capable of far more than they might have originally imagined.
Yeah, no, that makes perfect sense.
I'm so glad, Thane, you mentioned your experience in the Army. I had a scholarship through the Air Force for medical school and served in the Air Force and then attended Gonzaga through my GI Bill. And my husband still serves in the Air Force. And this brings up this idea how intertwined belonging, meaning, and purpose are. I wonder if we could kind of peel that onion back a little bit. So last interview we did with Dr. Hollis, he's a Jungian analyst. He's written 19 books and just a wealth of information. In one of his books, he distinguishes between society and community. Mm. And one of the distinctions is that community has transcended into a common purpose, and that's what makes them community. And what I hear you saying is your experience in the military gave you purpose, but that purpose also gave you community. And I hear you talking about how higher education has the potential to play into that dynamic as well. Do you mind just talking about the interplay between transcendence, belonging, and community?
Mm. Well, I think that, you know, in a lot of ways, what unites individual human beings is that we are, you know, sort of on a search for meaning. Mm-hmm. And with that comes sometimes, but I think it is distinct, that sense of what is my purpose in this world. I think that's experienced differently by different people and even different cultures. You know, the American sort of cultural milieu is far more sort of individualistic by nature. And that tends to create certain dynamics that maybe being part of a more collectivist culture doesn't or differentiates from it. But I do think that for me, an expression of transcendence in that context is that we can come to appreciate and realize in our own search for meaning and sort of the functional expression of that being our sort of purpose for living or working, a sense that this is about more than me and that I am part of a larger context and dynamic, much of which is actually defined by and informed by our relationships with other people. Mm-hmm. Certainly in the context of the work that I do, that sense that we have obligations to others is a very important expression of the work, in that we are trying to impress upon students, even from the beginning of their experience, that this whole project is not just for them. I mean, it could be, but from our way of thinking about it, the sort of obligation that comes with having the opportunity to do this kind of work and have these kinds of experiences is that you'll become contributive, and that you will figure out how you can parlay your gifts and your talents and that which you have discovered within yourself into beneficial purpose for others and sort of the community that you're a part of. And so I really feel that, you know, one of the probably not very mentioned hallmarks of serving in the military is that this really is certainly an opportunity as individuals for us to chart a path, but you really do from the get-go get a sense that you are in service to the nation, that you're in service to the beneficial existence of other people. And a lot of people who are in service, it doesn't take a lot for them to again recognize, realize, affirm that their efforts are benefiting people who may never meet them, may never even know what they're doing, but they are contributing to the welfare of a much larger sort of societal community of which they're a member, but which may be blissfully unaware of all that is going on to sort of keep them safe and allow them, enable them to be hopefully a part of a flourishing community. There's just so many different expressions for me of opportunities for transcendence in them. It's an interesting construct to try to think about.
Yeah, that really fits. And when we talked with Father Greg Boyle of Homeboy Industries in LA, one observation he had is that purpose is what's right in front of you. And then pairing that with what you're talking about, that some other clues of purpose is that it's part of something greater and that it's oftentimes with others.
Mm-hmm.
Those are just tangible observations, I think, that are really helpful.
2009-10, you get inaugurated as president. And in your mind, was there a sense of what you wanted to accomplish, a sense of purpose then? Or was it, I just want to keep the place, the doors open, kind of? How did you approach that?
I didn't choose this path. You know, in many respects, I never expected to be asked to serve as president of Gonzaga, much less any other university. But we had a search for a president who at that time had to be a Jesuit priest, and that search failed. They did not identify anybody that they felt was ready or appropriate for the moment. And so effectively just asked me to step in and kind of be a placeholder or keep, you know, keep the wheels on until they figured out what the next step was. So I entered it somewhat tentatively and with a view that this would probably not be very long term. As a matter of fact, I really saw myself as being a better sort of right hand person, if you will. I don't like being in the limelight. I like being kind of behind the scenes. Of course, I like to have, you know, beneficial purpose and effectiveness you know, as hallmarks. But I kind of almost felt like I had developed a sense of being a strategist, and that the leader is a visionary, but they need people who know how to execute. And I like being an executor rather than a visionary. So honestly, I came to the job with a lot of fear. I was like, oh my gosh, this is terrible. You know, there were a lot of things that I recognized about myself that I had no experience doing that university presidents have to do. Large audience public speaking or speaking to the media, fundraising, knowing something about athletics for a school that by that time even had gotten some renown for national basketball. Those kinds of things were completely unknown to me. So I guess I really came into it concerned and of the mind that this probably wasn't going to be long term. So we'll just dig in and you know, do the best we can until we figure out what the next step is. All too soon, it became clear that they were willing to let me do it if I was willing to do it. And I really had to do some reflecting on that. So I kind of, the entry was not smooth, and it was not, you know, with a lot of forethought. Yeah. It was more like, what? And then, you know, we'll just sort of make it up as we go along. So, yeah.
And you've done it, you know, and I know this will make you a little bit uncomfortable, but when you think about your success as president and longevity in the role, and understanding how you were brought in, how do you make sense of your longevity and success in the role? Yeah, I know it.
Yeah. Well, I mean, look, I guess what it comes down to for me is I really believe in our mission. I believe that our mission is vital. It's not just important. I always said to people from the beginning, you know, there's a lot of colleges and universities around the country. In fact, there's like 4,000 of them. And it is very clear, even at the beginning of my time, it was very clear that all of the forward-looking projections were not in favor of all these institutions making it. It's just not in the cards. So how does Gonzaga continue to remain vibrant and relevant and attractive to students and all of those kinds of things? Well, part of it is, you know, in really asserting what is it that we do that is so dang important. And I always said I wanted to be that institution that people couldn't imagine closing. You know, it's sort of like, even though we're private and even though we're not state supported and all those kinds of things, how can you imagine a Spokane without a Gonzaga? You know, and so a lot of it came down to really reinforcing the many ties and interdependencies that exist between the university and the region. And we've just continued to try to build on that as a central sort of core concept. But there's just so many amazing, talented people, and they're doing such significant work. And then really trying to remind people periodically of just how vital it is and how important it is, it has been both challenging but rewarding too, because it's not that hard. When we look at what our students go out and do, it's really easy to sort of say, see?
Yeah.
And but for this experience, they wouldn't be doing that. Maybe they'd be doing something else, but they wouldn't be doing that. And so this is a difference making kind of proposition.
Yeah. And it really is when you meet alums, and I run into them down here, you know, and they're just still passionate about their experience at Gonzaga, what it did for them. And it's just, I don't know how to say it. It's just so remarkable and consistent, you know what I mean? So there's really something about the space, and that I'm hearing you talk too, teasing out that sense of purpose that you've maintained these years. What in your mind, what was the biggest challenge in the last, 15 years, around maintaining a sense of clarity of vision and purpose? Were there challenges in that regard along the way?
Absolutely. The two most significant and very sort of publicly observable challenges from my vantage point were in succession, the ongoing, and it ebbs and flows, but it's been an ongoing thematic issue, which has to do with the challenges that have beset the Catholic Church as a function of the priest sex abuse crisis. There's been a tremendous impact on people's confidence in the institution of church, I think broadly. We hold ourselves out as a Catholic and Jesuit institution, so where are young people today in terms of lives of faith, and what is it that inspires them to have, a sense that having a faith life and being part of an organized religion is a good thing? Earlier generations, they kind of came through their upbringing without a lot of challenges to that, but today, across the board, all major, Christian religions are seeing challenges in terms of church going, with some exceptions. So that's one issue. How do we continue to think about our relationship to and our service to the church while all of that dynamic, is playing out with our primary constituencies? The other was COVID. It was a pretty earth-shaking issue, and a lot of institutions made choices that I didn't agree with. I'm not sure in the final analysis whether there's a right or a wrong, but for me, what it all comes down to for me is this is an experience. What we provide, what we offer to students, is an experience. At every level, it's an experience. And so I don't think about it as a service. I think about it as an experience. And we do that through the nexus medium of human interaction. So vital to that project are people. And what happened in the crisis of COVID, when everything was shutting down and institutions were forced to close and send students away and all that kind of stuff, go online, is a lot of institutions kind of decided to take a really conservative retrenchment kind of attitude. And so they furloughed people, or they laid people off, or they sort of temporarily suspended benefits or contributions to their retirement or what have you. We didn't do any of that. We kept everybody on the payroll. Even if people couldn't work because they were custodians, for example, and work meant coming to campus, not only did they continue to get paid and get all their benefits, they continued to accrue vacation. They continued to accrue sick leave, whatever. No change, because I believe that in the long run, if we were good to our people, they would be good back to us. And I didn't know what the future held, but I knew it was going to be hard. So, some people will remember that. Other people, COVID was too much and they decided to make a career change, and they may or may not ever remember that. But I believed at the time that that was the right way to do it, and I recognized I was at odds with other institutional leaders in that regard. But our people are what makes it happen and makes it work. And it was hard. But that was a crisis. So anyway, those are a couple.
Yeah, great examples. Beck.
Yeah, I think there's so many parallels here between the individual and the organization. You know, that's one of the reasons I was drawn to the Orgel program. Is as a psychiatrist, I work with individuals, but with Orgel, it's applying some of those concepts to large organizations. And just speaking frankly, it doesn't surprise me that you were asked to stay. Just being with you a short bit, you have a lot of humility, and it didn't seem like you came to Gonzaga so that it was all about you, but it was all about something larger. And just these ideas of meaning, purpose, belonging, both individually for you, but then also it's so true for the organization. And I wanted to just paint the framework that's fluid. We're working with it, but just kind of get your feedback on it, if you will. We started out with meaning. And with meaning, and be thinking of this individually, but also as an organization. There's transcendence. There's connecting to something higher that inspires you, that gives you direction. Then there's meaning from that comes from our values. So being able to live out your values. When you talked about we kept everybody on the payroll, that's a value of respect. That's a value of compassion. There's values that you and the institution have lived by, and then aligning those values. And then we talk about purpose as meaning with legs. It's aligning your values with something transcendent, but then putting it into action. And part of that is having agency, knowing that you're able to do that, actually doing something about it, but then that mastery. And you had mentioned that earlier. I was just wondering your thoughts on that relationship between meaning and purpose, and this idea that purpose does have an element of mastery. It does have an element of action.
Yeah, for sure. Because it feels to me a little bit like what you're exploring is how meaning is translated into action. And that purpose is almost like meaning driven.
Totally.
And so we can even experience meaning, but how do we share that, for example, or how do we impart that into the way in which purpose-driven activity becomes manifest in our organization or society, or even it could be a smaller team or what have you.
Yeah, like on that note, I mean, if you are a college student and you're thinking, okay, I've got this meaning, but what do I do with my life? You know, I mean, that's the quintessential question, right? Of all of these young adults who are trying to figure out what they want to be, how they want to spend their time. I mean, if this is that nexus where, okay, you've got the transcendence, you've got the values, but then what do you do with it? How do you talk to those students? How do you direct that part of your life and make that connection between meaning and purpose?
Yeah, well, I also think something that you mentioned was really important, which is values and the relationship between values and meaning. Because not to take us off topic, but just to very quickly reflect, one of the things that I do talk with our students about, and I talk with students about, you know, when I have smaller group opportunities, is what I believe is actually an expression of the transcendent, which is integrity. And that is to know what it is that I believe, what my values are, what my value system is, and to express that consistently across the various expressions of myself in the various, you know, sort of dimensions of my life. So I'm the same person with my family as I am at college, and I'm the same person at a party as I am in a classroom. And that sense that I am a person who is integrated rather than disintegrated, because I'm still sort of, you know, inconsistently trying to figure out what I really believe or what I truly value. And I think that's important, because if you are working with disintegrated people and systems, you're doing very different kinds of work, you know. And as a psychiatrist, that's a space you understand very well. So there's some assumptions here that come with it. But one of the reasons that I really admonish college students to think about their values system and this issue of integrity is that I think it makes it easier for them to then imagine how to translate meaning into purpose. But one of the things that I also really encourage them to realize is that it's okay to imagine that your life is going to play out almost as a search for successive purposeful expressions, that landing on one thing and becoming one thing or one expression of oneself may be too restrictive and may actually set the bar in a way that makes it harder for people, because they feel like there's so much at stake. And I have really tried to encourage students in general to think about it more in terms of a charting of your path that's going to have multiple possibilities, and that being open to the possibility that you may not end up where you originally thought, but that's okay, as long as you're still who you are and you remain true to your beliefs and your system of principles is going to serve you well. And then one other tiny piece, I also have shared that, and it was a great piece of advice, you know, for example, my discipline is psychology, and it's a very popular major in college. And as a result, the competition for entry into grad programs in psychology is fierce. But students who really decide that mastery of the subjects at whatever level they're at is a virtuous goal, and they really work hard towards mastery, are more likely to gain entry to the path that they're choosing. Because the truth is, whatever profession, there's always a search on for the best. And so whether somebody wants to be a writer, or somebody wants to be a reporter, or somebody wants to be a psychologist, there's always somebody out there who's looking for the best person they can find to do that in their organization or whatever. And so how do you kind of marry those desires to one another? Part of that, the answer to that has to be mastery.
Yeah, it's a compelling thought, you know, this idea that mastery can be a byproduct of purpose, but if it's sought after just as a competitive means, it can short circuit purpose. Mm-hmm.
Absolutely.
And that when you're really living your purpose, just like in a previous interview, this idea that that which seeks expression through you becomes manifest. Mm-hmm. In a way that it's like a gift, right? When you see somebody who's just phenomenal at the cello and they love it so much and they practice every day and they present that, it's a gift. And when you see somebody who works so hard and they may be the best in their field, but it's a gift that they're offering. But I think sometimes in such a hyper-competitive culture, we conflate the two and think that just because you're the best that you have purpose, versus really being in flow and entranced in your purpose, and that motivating you and driving you to seek that excellence.
Yeah, I also would say too that, you know, sometimes we reference passion,
mm-hmm.
and I think that passion is especially when viewed in terms of its relationship to occupations, is a product of the kind of almost ideal confluence of meaning and purpose and transcendence. That a derivative of that is that somebody finds joy in what they're doing. And that becomes recombinant, because people who find joy in what they do generally tend to invest in becoming even better at it. And I am one of these types of people who believes that, you know, that even the concept of the perfect is silly, but there is that sense of really finding joy and passion in one's work and in one's artistic expression and so forth, that I think has a relationship to mastery. I had an opportunity to talk with a very well respected surgeon, and he was a very long career, very, very successful. And I said, tell me, based on your life and experience, what do you think distinguishes the very best surgeons and doctors from those who are good, but, you know, maybe not the best? He said, without hesitation, he said, listening. The best doctors start by listening. And they don't jump in too fast. They seek from their patient a deep understanding of what it is that person is experiencing. And the longer they listen, the more information they get that will help the physician to more accurately get a sense of what is really happening. Because all too often, good doctors come with more of a preconceived notion of what's probably happening than they even realize themselves. That's not a master. That good, it can work out, but it's not great. And I always was just really stunned by that answer, because it tells you something about what's being assumed in that interaction. That to me is distinctive. And of course, listening, you know, is an active act that's marrying information that somebody is sharing with you with the knowledge that you've accumulated over a period of time. And so even in my own work, I've been inspired to do far more listening than I might have at an earlier phase, just by sort of studying masterful technique. But that individual was also really passionate about what they did. And I thought, this is somebody who's found joy.
Well, this idea how these concepts all hitchhike on each other, you know, this idea of excellence through listening. If you just were to strive for excellence, you'd miss the mark. You have to take another train to get there, so to speak.
Mm-hmm.
And your excellent point about passion, if you just wait for passion to overcome you and then have clarity on what you want to do because passion came to you, that's taking the wrong train. But if you focus on joy and flow, they get you there. Or like how Frankl talks about happiness, if you just strive for happiness, you'll never get it. But if you strive for meaning, it'll get you there. And I think those are really interesting points, and I appreciate you making them. And I also really appreciate that point that purpose is iterative. It's not one and done. Because you're right. I mean, we both work with young people a lot, and there's so much pressure to make the next right move. And when you think that next right move is every single move for the rest of your life, that's too much. That's paralyzing. But just having it be almost more of a playful experience of just gathering one clue after another and getting on the trail, so to speak. I really appreciate those points.
Yeah. When I was advising students in undergraduates in psychology, and they were trying to apply to grad schools, I said, let's start by understanding what the process is. How do you stand out? You can't hew to the path that's already been well-worn. You have to be creative. And more than one of the students I advised came back and said, wow, you know, I honestly didn't think that was going to work, but it worked pretty well, actually. One student really wanted to get into med school, but they also really wanted to do a year abroad. And they were worried that studying abroad was going to feel to the medical school like they were recreating during their college experience, and they weren't really focused on getting into medical school. So he said, I'm really torn because I really want to do this study abroad experience, and I'm not sure I'll ever do it again. And I said, I think you should do it. But here's the question that you have to answer. How do you take that experience and make it relevant to the thing you next want to do? And so what he did when he went to Florence, Italy, where we have a program, he volunteered for the Florentine Ambulance Service. Oh. And you know what? They took him on. They were like, yeah, this is great. By the end of the year, he was a certified Italian EMT. And you know what? He got into 7 medical schools, not 1, 7. He got a full ride to Creighton. Okay. Why? Because he stood out, right? He had done something different than a lot of the other students who were applying to med school. In fact, I think he was almost at a disadvantage because he was going to be the same age as a lot of people just coming out of college, and med school is often like a little bit more experience. But he did it. He was like, he loved it too. He had a great year. He loved Italy, but he got to do something that that was really contributive and showed that he really wanted to do this kind of work. And they were like, this is a no-brainer.
I think what I hear you saying, and correct me if I'm wrong, are these examples show how if you want something, but you're solely focused on going in the direction of that thing, you can miss it. So like, if I want purpose and I read all these books on purpose and I, you know, try to just focus on purpose, I might miss it because I'm missing meaning. I'm missing belonging. These other ways that you have to go to get there. It's like, if I wanted to walk in the direction of the sun and I just stared at the sun the whole time, I'd go blind. But if I can see it obliquely, I'm actually going to get to where I need to go. I hear you saying sometimes these really big concepts, if we look at them too dead on and hyper focus on going towards them, they can paradoxically be harder to get to. Whereas if we get lost in the things that will take us there, we're more likely to arrive. Is that accurate?
It is. And I think also it's interrelated with meaning, because if you are kind of forcing yourself, especially for something that may have a very high barrier for entry, to be creative about how you're going to go about getting where you want to go, it's going to force you to really do some reflecting on the why. Mm-hmm. And I think purpose can be a lot about the how, but I think meaning is about the why. Mm-hmm. And so why am I doing this? Like, really? Sometimes the answer is, I don't know, and I better do some more work to figure that out. Or sometimes the answer is, I actually don't like this. I thought I did. I thought I was going to do this, but this actually isn't working for me. It doesn't bring the kind of meaning. Other times it's like, yes, I can live more fully into this because I'm affirming the meaning behind the purpose. And it feels very interconnected with who I believe I am and how it's going to enhance my journey towards fulfillment and that sense of transcendence.
No, that's excellent. And one of the things that's occurred to me was I've been focused lately on identity, like a leadership identity, and how does that develop for somebody? And it really does relate, I think, to what especially what both of you were talking about. Some years ago, I was doing a triathlon training thing in Spokane, and my coach took me aside and said, "Joe, do you want to just finish triathlons, or do you want to be a triathlete?" And the question stopped me, in my tracks. And I thought, well, I don't know. I just do them. Yes, exactly. And so if you want to be a triathlete, it's a little different, in terms of commitment and time and how you view yourself. And I did a workshop at Avista recently, a utility company in Spokane, and it was on leadership identity. And I asked the group, how many of you see yourselves as leaders? Even the high VP folks were like, boy, I don't know. That seems like very aspirational, something out there, but it's something I'm working towards, But it spoke to me of that, of this sense of desire for mastery, of commitment, of willingness to do the work, put forth the effort to become what I want to become, And I think it's true for musicians, for writers, but for leaders, certainly it's true that this is something that I've got to grow into and work at becoming. Like that great story about the kid in Florence working with the ambulances. That's a great story about just commitment, but also a sense of purpose that the medical schools viewed favorably. So thanks for sharing that. That was excellent. So, Beck, any last comments before we wrap up? And I'm going to let Thane take us out here, but any last thoughts?
I just appreciate the dialogue and pushing these ideas forward and how interconnected they are and how unformulaic they are, right? If you told me at 22, hey, the thing that you really should do to get into medical school is go get your EMT in Italy and volunteer on an ambulance. But I was passionate about French literature. It wouldn't fill me with purpose.
Right.
Right. And how the first part of meaning really has to lock in. And then how belonging ties into that. It just felt like a really beautiful way to end the season reflectively of how these concepts really are meant for each other. And they're not meant to be on an island. So thank you for bringing that to surface. Thank you for your service both to your country and to Gonzaga.
Well, absolutely. Thank you for letting me be part of this work. And Beck, thank you for your service. And Joe, I reflect at just how long you and I have now known one another and what great opportunities we had to work as colleagues and co-teachers. And I am convinced that this work is important. I think we're living at a time when, ironically, technology has actually created just as many problems around issues of meaning, purpose, and transcendence as it has enhanced. And I mean, it's like so many things. It's a medium, but I am filled with hope because I believe there are people who think that these things are really important, and I'm grateful to have a little bit of time to do a little reflecting out loud about them myself.
Well, this has been extraordinary in so many ways, and doggone it, I ho sure hope you commit yourself to writing some of this up. Okay, I would love to read just your thoughts on just this and certainly just leadership in general. You're extraordinary in so many ways, and I'm really appreciative of our connection, but especially doing this today with us. So I will let you go, but with best wishes this coming year, and I look forward to see your future and what unfolds there for you. So thank you so much for joining us.
You're welcome, and thank you. Thank you both.
Wow, that was such a pleasure to talk with Thane, and so many good points. What did you walk away with this taking, Joe?
I think his ability to, first of all, the background in the military. I knew he was in the Army, but I don't think I put together his perception of that time in the military and how that impacted his vision for his work at Gonzaga. That was in a very student-focused kind of way. I think he's been really incredible in terms of paying attention. Like, he always walks through the dorms before the students get there in August, you know, because he wants to make sure everything's okay for them. And I feel like, and I knew that about him, you know, for years now, but that impact of the military and very diverse people coming together, and somehow the Army and all the military branches, I think, make it work. You know, the very diverse group of folks, some educated, some not, but somehow they put them together and prepare them to do whatever role they're going to be in. And I think that really shaped his view of his role as president. And that was new to me, honestly. The second thing was, I think, for me, that sort of synthesis of transcendence, meaning, and purpose, and how they sort of come together in different ways. And his little anecdote about the surgeon and listening, and that was really quite powerful, I thought. And so I guess all those things, and his future being uncertain, but he has such a humility about himself, I think, that he'll be open to whatever comes his way without, you know, I've got to be something great, because he's done stuff. He's already done something great. And he will continue to do so. So that were my takeaways. What about you?
Yeah, I just really enjoyed his honest reflection on his path and how he got to where he is, and how it wasn't this teleologic, if I do this, then this will happen, and so on and so forth. He just really immersed himself into the greater meaning of Gonzaga, the greater belonging of Gonzaga and connecting to the community, and how that's resulted in the greater purpose, both for himself and for Gonzaga. And it makes me excited in the direction we're going too. You know, our first season, we were exploring a lot of different themes that arise in leadership, and being able to focus more on these existential themes of meaning, purpose, and belonging, it kind of feels like, you know, we're in the dark, and let's just say, to use the metaphor, it's an elephant. Like, we know that that's the deep existential draw that we're trying to articulate. And then being able to piece together meaning, purpose, belonging as being part of that. But then we get these other descriptors of transcendence and meaning and safety and authenticity and connection and agency and mastery and action, all these things. It's like we're just feeling around and observing. But then when it comes to life and is animated by our guests through their stories, it really engages me, and it makes me really grateful to be a part of this. And I really hope our listeners get something out of this, and we'd love to hear feedback too going into this next season of what people would love to hear more of. Yeah. Any other closing thoughts?
Oh, that's an excellent point. And it animated, I think, what we were trying to do, each of our interviewees this year. I mean, they've brought dimensions to life and a certain clarity that I certainly didn't have before, you know, and that's what makes it so doggone interesting, I think, is one, our ability to allow the person to paint the picture in a way, you know, that's like, oh, okay, I see how that manifests in your life, or how you animate that dimension, whatever it might be. But that's been really clear to me, I think, as we've gone along. And I'm really looking forward to next year. And, you know, the quality of people we had this year was extraordinary, I thought. And I think we'll continue that, but we would love to hear from listeners. You know, what worked for you? What didn't? What else would you like to hear about? So all those things, I think, we'll just leave on the table for people to ponder a little bit before we begin again in September. So.
Awesome. Well, we know you have lots of places you could be spending your time. So thank you for spending some time with us. If you do want to give feedback or just want to plug into more information on these deeper themes, go to leading-deeply.com. Again, that's leading-deeply.com. And we look forward to joining you next season.
Thank you. Thank you, Beck. And thank you, listeners. Much appreciated.